kind of costumes do we have? A what? A mannequin? That's creepy. Anybody else? Mannequin? Can anybody beat mannequin? Yep.
A Starbucks cup.
A Starbucks cup. Tall? Venti? Grande? Over here?
Q-tip.
Who?
Q-tip.
A Q-tip. To think, I just always got dressed as a hobo. A what? Okay. It sounds creepy. Don't come to my house. You'll scare me. Yes? A what? Oh, an emoji icon. I like that. Yes, ma'am? A pink blanket? Like a pig in a blanket, you were the sausage? All right, I'm out. It's Halloween, you know, and tonight is Hogloween, and it is a great time, and it is fun, and it is exciting. And if you haven't been, we encourage you to come. But I know as a pastor, I'm supposed to be bashing the evils of Halloween right now. I'm supposed to be telling you how it's the night of the devil, right? Except, I love Halloween. I mean, there's things I don't like about it. There's things because people have made such a fuss over it that it's gotten this rap and it's become, I think, what it really wasn't. A lot of people emphasize the death and the devil and all that. I love Halloween because, think about it, tomorrow night is the only night of the year where you can get dressed up as a Q-tip, go knock on someone's door, and get candy. Right? Try that on Wednesday night and see what happens to you, right? So it's Halloween, and I've always wondered if the people who kind of bash on Halloween, if they understand where Halloween came from. Halloween was an old Druid holiday. It was a holy day in the Druid religion. And it was about 1,600 years ago that it began to change. But for the Druids, Halloween was like their New Year's Eve. And what the Druids believed is that every year, the souls that passed away would be judged. Either good, not so good, rotten. Right? And if they were judged good, they'd come back as another human. Not so good as an animal, rotten, I couldn't find out what that was. We'll call it a cockroach. Okay? So that's what they believe. And the reason why we do what we do on Halloween is because in those days, when the Druids were celebrating New Year's Eve for them, people would come to the door and you would want to give them a treat because they may be one of your relatives. That's what they believed. We do the jack-o'-lanterns because the candle represents, like it does for us, this eternal flame, this eternity of life as they believed it. But then the Christian missionaries came, and like they did with most pagan holidays, they hijacked that holiday and they turned it into All Saints Day, the day where we spend the service remembering those who are near and dear to us, who are no longer with us. Some died in the last year. some years ago. I love All Saints Day. Maybe it's the Catholic in me that loves it so much, because in the Catholic Church, it's a high holy day of obligation. You went to Mass. You received communion. You lit a candle. That's what it is. I love it because I am reminded that I am not a trailblazer. I am not the Lone Ranger. That I follow people who've already walked the same walk that I'm walking. And I stand on the shoulders of people who've come behind me, in front of me. And I remember that no matter how alone I might feel sometimes, I'm really not alone. Now, I also love the scripture that is often read on All Saints Day. It comes out of a very difficult book to understand. It comes out of the book of Hebrews. And we're going to read the 12th chapter, and we're going to start at the first verse, and we're going to look at that. And so the writer, who we don't know who it was, writes this: "So then, let's also run the race that is laid out in front of us, since we have such a great cloud of witnesses surrounding us." Now, I just love that, because the imagery that is painted, if you look at the original language, is powerful, is strong. The word that the writer uses for cloud is a word called nephos. Say nephos with me. Nephos. That means cloud in Greek. You learned how to speak Greek. And when they used it, one of the translations of nephos were those white puffy things that hang out in the sky. But there was another more common use of the word nephos. It referred to the arena where events would take place. And it referred specifically to the highest seats in the house, because those were, in those days, the best seats. And so if you went to an event and you handed the usher your ticket, they would say, "Ah, you're in the nephos section," which means you've got the best seats available, high in the clouds. Kind of, anybody been to NASCAR? I used to think NASCAR, the best place would be on the front row, and I went to one NASCAR race, and only one, and we'll never go back, but it was fun, but not that much fun. It was just loud and everything. But the best seats at a NASCAR race aren't front row. It's up high. See everything. That's how it was. So what this imagery is this giant arena and the seats in the clouds. And then he says this. He says, and we are surrounded by that. Now, the word he uses for surrounded comes from two Greek words. One means fully encircle something, and the other means to lie around. Now, so the image that this Hebrew writer wanted you to gather, that first century people would have understood, was that we are somehow completely encircled, that is stacked high on every side. I mean, is that... And who are they stacked with? Who are the people in this arena? Now, according to the writer of Hebrews, they're not spectators. They're witnesses. You know the difference? Spectators are those people who simply watch as you do your thing. Witnesses in the Greek comes from, that's where they get the word martyr. Witnesses actually have walked the walk you're walking, have actually experienced what you are experiencing. And so what the writer says to us is that we are surrounded by these witnesses as far and high as the eyes can see. And they're cheering us on. Well, who's in the stands? Well, Hebrew writer gives on the chapter before this roll call of faith. Abraham and Jacob and Isaac and Rahab. And he lists all these men and women of the Bible who were heroes of the Bible. And there are some scholars who believe that that's all that's in the stands. I don't agree with that. You see, I happen to think anyone we've loved, anyone that's loved us, are in the nephos, surrounding us, encouraging us, cheering us on. So I look around this room and I hear those names, and they may not be sitting here, but I see Dale right over there. I can miss Harry there. Jack and Anna staked out seats for God knows how many years, right? Linda would be in the back wearing a hat as she went through chemo, making jokes about her death, right? And we can go through these stories of people from this church who have done what we are trying to do. And as we try to move forward, they are cheering us on. But more than that, there's people who we don't know. I mean, people I don't know right now. People who have joined the church eternal. Who I know they're there. A grandmother or a mother, child or friend, a dad. And they are in this nephos, this cloud of witnesses, and somehow in ways I cannot explain to you, in ways I cannot understand, nor do I want to, they are cheering us on as we run this race. I mean, I see it. I feel it. I mean, when I feel like quitting, I hear the voices that saying, "Don't quit. You can do this. We did it." When I'm tired and I just want to rest, they're there to pick me up and say, "You can do this." When I'm discouraged, I hear the voices saying, "Come on, Marty, you can take another step." And when I fall, they're there not only to pick me up, but to put a Band-Aid on my knee. Those are the ones I hear. See, that's what I believe, that those are the people in the stands. And they're not just spectators, they're witnesses. They've walked where we walked. They've run where we run. They stumbled when we stumbled. They weren't perfect. They were flawed human beings. In fact, if you're a recovering Catholic like some of us, and we learned all the saints, what you realize is that the saints are more flawed than anyone else you're ever going to meet for the most part. I mean, just study the life of Francis, St. Francis or Augustine. I mean, they were wild men. But they lived their life of faith as if it was something more than they just believed. They lived out their faith to the best of their ability, every day. We could go around the room and everyone who's lost someone could share a story, right? And the stories would be so different, but what they would all have in common is that they would be about the love and the compassion and the serving and the way they were always there, because as it says, that's what saints do. And those are the ones cheering us on. Remember that festival of San Juan? Well, they had another great tradition. Early in the evening, the community would gather, and they would build this bonfire out of these coals, and they would light the fire, and they would tell stories around the fire of the loved ones who had passed away that year. And this would go late into the night. And when the stories were finished and the fire was almost gone, each family would take home one of the coals, right? It would still be glowing. They would go home to their house, they would put it in the fire pit, and they would reignite that flame. And they would build a fire in their own home that was filled with the memories of these community stories. And then they would tell stories about their loved ones to one another as they remembered and as they shared. And they would hold on to that coal, that ember, for as long as they could. And they would be warmed by the memories of the people they love and the people they miss. So that's what this day is about. That's what it's about. Now, there's something else a Hebrew writer says. It says, not only do we have this cloud of witnesses that's cheering us on, get this. He says, as we run this race, if we keep our eyes focused on Jesus, the author and perfecter of the faith, we'll finish the race. And then at the end of our lives, we'll hear those words that our loved ones have already heard. Job well done. Good. Faithful servant. Great is your reward. So we come here, and we keep our eyes focused on the author and perfecter of our faith, and our hearts are warmed with the memories of our loved ones who are no longer with us. And then we hear these words. We hear words that Jesus spoke, the author, perfecter of our faith. Words that he was telling those that he had gathered. He had already warned them that he wasn't going to be around long, that he had to leave, that he was going to another place and they couldn't come yet, but soon they would join him there. And he made this beautiful promise. And then he took this loaf of bread, and it must have been an amazing moment as he gave thanks. And he broke it. And when he broke it, he said this. He said, eat this, every one of you, for this is no longer bread. This is now my body broken for you. Do this and remember. Remember. And then when supper was over, he took the cup. And again, he gave thanks, blessed it, gave it. He said, drink from this, each of you. For this is no longer just fruit of the vine. This is now my blood poured out for you and for many, so that all your sins may be forgiven. Do this and remember how much I love you. And so we come to a table. We hear the words, and we know we're not alone, that we are surrounded by these witnesses. And as we share this meal, we don't share it alone, but within a community surrounded by those who have gone before. And with that, we find grace and we find hope. But most of all, we find love. Because what remains here that we can touch and we can taste aren't the things our saints did, but the love they offered. And so you're invited to come. The way we're going to do it is way different. People who don't like change, sorry. We have put tables all around, and we wanted it to be all around, so we get the sense of being surrounded, right? And at each table are the communion elements, some bread and a cup. But there's also little candles. And you're invited to light a candle in memory of someone who's no longer with us, or some people who are no longer with us. One candle per family or person. Because we only have 500 candles. And then you are invited to receive communion. You can receive it yourself. You can serve one another. Any way you want to do it. This is your time. It's your time to keep your eyes focused on the author and perfecter of our faith. But it's your time to be warmed by the stories of the people who love us as we gather together at this table.